Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to Coach and Coordinator Podcast, and we continue our series, Lessons from 2018, with our national conference speakers. And joining me today on the podcast for the third time is the state runner-up from Illinois, the head football coach at St. Charles North, Rob Pomazak. Rob, always great to talk ball with you.
Thanks for having me on, Keith. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak and to be on the podcast today.
You know, Rob, it was fun to watch you guys through the season. I mean, it's easy now to see huddle highlights and to read some of the stories. So it was kind of fun to see how your team progressed through the season. It was really neat, you know, because we had that podcast on, I think we called it Installing Fun. I'll put that one in our show notes so listeners can go back to it. But just hearing, you know, about how you went about building your culture, building team, getting your minds right for the season, you know, that was some good insight, I think, into things that happened for you in this season. I'm sure we'll get into some of those again in this podcast. But with that in mind, you know, looking back at 2018, what are some of your takeaways? What did you learn from that season?
Oh, I think the biggest takeaway is probably the mindset of really making a focus point on teaching how to process adversity and the mindset of going into a season and what may happen as the season goes on. We lost our starting quarterback in the third quarter of our first game to a torn ACL. And just from that point on, it was, you know, you can either put your tail between your legs and go home or you can just press forward. And our kids really did a great job of using the training that we did all off season to kind of persevere and take the next step. And we never really missed a beat.
The adversity part, I know, it's something everybody faces. And you talked about really kind of three key injuries at different points through the season. So one in the beginning, you had one, I think you told me, around week 7, and then one into the playoffs. It's not always an easy thing to recover, especially when the second big one happens, right? I mean, there is the emotional part of it for your players, you know, for the coaching staff too, and there's the adjustment. For you guys, what was something you guys did to essentially be able to overcome those challenges, be able to overcome that adversity?
Well, I think from like a tactical standpoint, we always talk about every single week about what to expect and what is the other team going to bring and what type of environment are we going to be in. And for us, it comes down to always controlling the environment and what do we need to do as a team to maintain the status quo from our side. And then we go through if injuries happen, you know, and we unfortunately lost our starting running back week 7, and then we lost our starting Mike linebacker week 1 of the playoffs. And, you know, at that point, you're like, holy cow, like how can, you know, even me as a coach is like, okay, what do you do? How do you keep moving forward? But one of the things that we kind of always told the kids is that adversity is going to happen and how we respond to it's going to be the most important thing to get the outcome that we wanted to. And kind of the stuff that, you know, Brian Kite has talked about on your podcast before and the focus 3 group. So we spent a lot of time on that and our kids have really bought into it because it was just the next man up mentality, the ability of our second string or the backups to come in and understand that they've got a role to fill. And then the guys who are supporting the starters out there who are supporting that position know that they have to do maybe a little bit more. And we never really dwelled on it. We always try to stay positive with it because, you know, it's a negative enough experience when a kid goes down and everybody first, there's that split second where everybody kind of takes a deep breath and, you know, you're either going to step up to the moment and fall back on the training that you've done, or you're going to let the moment be bigger than you. And our kids just did a great job of buying into that philosophy and, you know, couldn't be prouder of the way they handled it. And I think part of it was the way that we've trained in the off season with going to a sophomore varsity combined practice. That was a big addition to what we did this past season, and I think it paid dividends for us.
Yeah, I know that's something you mentioned to me before we got going. You said you picked up on the podcast here, and I think we traced that one back to our podcast with Pine Richland High School and PA state champion Eric Kasparovic and some of the ideas that you heard from him. So how did you take that and, I guess, mold it into what you guys do?
We had always been a three-level program, freshman, sophomores, and varsity, that was separate from one another. And listening to the podcast and then kind of doing some research on, you know, effective ways to efficiently maneuver, you know, two groups together. And one of the things that we looked on at the end of the season analysis last year was there was a content gap from our kids moving into from sophomore to varsity. And so we needed to bridge that learning gap somehow. And so we figured if we combined our levels, that would allow our varsity coaches to extend, because we gained three varsity coaches who were sophomore coaches before, but now have varsity positions. And then we'd be able to have a hands-on approach to those kids. And throughout the summer, we really kind of kept tabs on the amount of reps our players were getting from ones to twos to threes, and trying to make sure that it was almost a 50-50 split with our starters and our reserves, just in the case that, you know, we wanted to prepare our kids in the instance that their number was called. And it proved to be probably the biggest difference in our season, because, you know, when our starting quarterback went down, his brother, who was a junior, stepped in and took the role, and he had only played as a freshman and was injured as a sophomore. So essentially he came in with just the summer to rely on, and he led us to the state championship game. And then when our running back went down, his younger brother, who was a sophomore, we brought up with us, and he took over the role at running back. And then when our middle linebacker went down, we brought up a sophomore, and he ended up playing in the state championship game. So it was, if you would have told me at the end of the season that we would have had that scenario and we would still be playing that deep into the playoffs, I would have told you you're crazy. But I kind of think it was that foundational work that we did in June, July, and August that really set us up for success throughout the season, because our kids who stepped in just did a phenomenal job.
I know in making that move, and you think back to maybe how you've done your things early in your career, I think early on I would make the mistake of being too heavy on reps for my number ones, and the thought that I had to get them as many reps as possible. Those are the guys playing on Friday, and, you know, the reserves taking a back seat. Now, I changed over time with that to, you know, essentially what you were saying, close to 50-50 there with the split.
Right.
How difficult was it for you and your staff to make that shift? Were there any challenges, I guess, in your mindset that you had to overcome?
You have to be okay with it not being perfect. I think as head coaches, we all, I mean, most of us are probably type A personalities, and we have this vision. We spend hours on hours on practice planning, and we have this vision of it being this Division I collegiate level practice plan. And you have to be okay with it not looking perfect and there being mistakes, and just kind of see the forest through the trees and know that while it might not be what we want right now in July, the payoff in November could be huge for us, because that's the end goal. So that was something that I think was for us philosophically, we had to come to terms with. But we talked about it early on when we were deciding to make this change. We sat down as a staff and we kind of proposed a couple practice models. And, you know, you always want to look at the hurdles that you might incur. And that was probably the biggest one, because we all want to look great. We all have an ego that we want to our practices to be perfect. But you have faith in your kids. That was probably the biggest thing that we kept reassuring each other, is just have faith in your players that they're gonna adjust, and they'll adjust to the speed, and they'll get better because of it. And I think it really helped us from the standpoint of connection too. Like, that's probably the second thing I learned was, you know, the connection of a team from player to coach and coach to player is so important to your success. And it allowed us to develop maybe those relationships that maybe we don't always develop with the second string and the third string, because they're getting that one-on-one coaching. They're getting the repetition that the other starters are getting. So there was a level of, fairness and equitability a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the players appreciated that. So that was something that we kind of looked at and we were okay with. And then it also, you have to plan for it too. We also went to a two scout team system. So we had enough players. We had over 105 players for the practices. So we were able to run a first team offense and a second team offense against two scout teams. And so we would split the field in half, and that would allow us to really you know, we're doing our own scheme on both sides of the ball in the summer. So it allowed us to really double rep. And from a coaching standpoint, it feels really good when you can look at the field and see 44 kids getting reps in your scheme. Mm-hmm. And so I think that was something that we had never done before. And it kind of stretched me to the limits of my, you know, firstly, my skill set as a coach, where how do I effectively manage this situation? But we kind of modified and changed things up every single week to make it work. But by the end of the season, it looked pretty good.
With that in mind, I know you said preseason camp, you're working two scout teams, and essentially, you know, on the other side of the ball, you're working your own stuff. Does that stay similar once you get into the season, and when you're working your offensive period, you're still going against two scout teams?
Yeah, as the season progressed, there were certain days that we would stay with the sophomores and we would work. They would serve as the scout team during team segments. You know, that was something that we had talked about, is we didn't want to relegate our sophomores to just being a scout team. They had to have time to get better as a program as well. So we would have certain segments within the practice where they would serve as a second scout team. But then as we moved into more whole group work, then they would move into their own scheme. And so that was something that we kind of tweaked and manipulated throughout the season based on the needs of the week. And our sophomore staff and our sophomore players understood that, but we always made sure to give them, you know, a good amount of time so that they could properly prepare for their game, because we didn't want them to feel like they were playing second fiddle and just being a relegated scout team.
Mm-hmm. And obviously the transition to this type of system included dealing with and getting kids probably in the right mindset to be able to handle this. They've seen something before. Maybe they're used to a certain way. The starters might have, you know, been used to getting a lot more of the lion's share of the reps. So yeah. What things did you have to do to make that a smooth transition as well?
At the beginning of June, because we're allowed 25 contact days in the summer, we took a day as a staff and we printed out practice plans, the first week practice plan, and we literally walked through it just as a staff and went from classroom to weight room, then out to field work and talked about who's going to be where are the old linemen going to be, where are the DBs going to be. And we went period by period just so that we could navigate any unforeseen, you know, logistical errors that we had and personnel issues. And then we brought the kids in the following week, and we normally do a 4-day week, but this week, that first week went to 2 days. We walked the kids through our practice model on the Tuesday as just a true walkthrough where we just took them through the logistics of it. And then the following Thursday, we actually did a full run through so that we could speed up the pace a little bit. And then the Monday of the next week was our official first practice. So we had actually walked through that practice two times already. So by that point, the kids knew where they were supposed to be. They had a good idea of what side of the ball they're working on, what the priority was that particular day. So I guess like the amount of learning and teaching we did as a staff was pretty extensive, because like the last thing I want is to go out to a practice. Like I'm at the Northwestern Bowl practice right now, and you watch how they move and how they, everything is timed, and it's this orchestrated production. And the last thing I want is our kids to not know where they're supposed to be, because that hurts the program on every level.
Yeah, I think that's a good approach. I really got into the practice of all of our coaches, you know, and being an offensive coordinator at the college level. So my offensive staff, we were installing drills in meeting sessions. We were installing, yeah, you know, the movement through practice in meeting sessions. I love the idea that you actually took the time to go out and, number one, walk through, rehearse it as a staff so you knew where you're going, and then bring your players into it and then hit the ground running. And there's a lot to be said about creating that efficiency in practice. Like you said, you know, you're out at Northwestern the way they do it, and it's very well orchestrated. There's not a lot of lost time between drills, and can't tell you how many practices, you know, I've been to and out and visiting other coaches or recruiting and those kinds of things where you're like, oh my God, we got to move, guys. Let's go. Let's get going here. And, you know, they're using a period clock, but they're holding the clock like 2 minutes. And by the end of practice, like they've gone over an extra 20, 30 minutes. So there's a lot to be said about understanding the efficiencies of practice and how you can create those.
Yeah, I think, but you also have to be comfortable like taking a step back and slowing it down you know, I think that's probably, as coaches, that was probably the hardest sell to my staff is, well, we're using a contact day to just walk through the practice model. And I think you got to kind of look where do you want to be for the season, as opposed to where do we want to be on Monday of day one or Tuesday of day one, whatever it is. If we don't understand the logistics of how we're going to move through practice, that affects the learning of the team that we're trying to do. Because then kids are trying to work, well, where am I supposed to be? Then coaches get frustrated. And we try to maintain a really positive attitude at practice because, you know, our kids are doing us a favor. They're out there giving it everything they have. So for me, it's the most important thing is that there's a full understanding by everybody of what's the practice goal? How do we want to move through it? Because then the true learning can take place once we get into the meat and potatoes of the game planning.
Yeah, that's great. Coach, would you be able to share a practice plan? I know maybe it won't make sense to everybody, but at least show us the structure a little bit, and we could put it up on the show notes as a PDF.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd be happy to do that. Like you said, it might not make a ton of sense, but I can tag some comments in it off the Excel, too, if you need me to.
Yeah, that'd be great. That'd be great. Coach, looking at the season, I know, again, I told you I watched some things on the internet and saw some big plays. Mm-hmm. I remember seeing the overtime touchdown and the excitement that went along with that. But from the X and O stamp, what's a play you guys used or a concept you guys used this last season that was pretty big for you?
Well, we did the old Nick Saban, get your best players the ball. From an offensive standpoint, I think the biggest thing is we lost our starting quarterback week one, the third quarter, and our junior was fairly inexperienced, and he just did a great job of managing the game and keeping us in and played far better than we thought. So that was one thing I thought, you know, from a staff standpoint, that, you know, we spent the extra time to get him up to speed on our scheme. We obviously had to look at his skill sets and taper it to what would fit him from a read progression to the route concepts. There were some things we could do with him in our spread offense that maybe we couldn't do with the other quarterback. But then there were also certainly some things from maybe a passing game where we had to cut down the field from a read standpoint. But then we also looked at, we had a pretty special athlete who we wanted to get the football, and we said, okay, how often do we want him to touch the ball? So we installed a wildcat offense. He took the direct snap, and as the season progressed, and I think the game you're referring to is the semifinal, he ran the ball, I think, 30 times. And so we wanted to get an extra hat in the box, and he's a Division I All-State caliber athlete. And so for us, counter, you know, a double wing counter, we went from a spread offense. I think by the state championship, we were running a single wing with him at QB quite a bit. So it really kind of stretched us to going back to the philosophy of how do we get our players the football in a position of success and consistency. And they, even though it went against maybe our offensive philosophy of being a fast-paced spread offense, where we like to throw the ball around the room a little bit, it kind of forced us to get back to basics, look at our run game philosophy, tighten that up, and installing the wildcat was something that we had planned to do, but we were forced to do it way earlier than we did. And, you know, it just kind of kept going back every single week as the playoffs went, as we got deeper into the playoffs, is how do we get our playmakers the football? And a lot of it was kind of reinventing some things that maybe we had from a scheme standpoint and putting it in a different formation. We went to a double tight formation about midway through the season to kind of create some extra gaps and stress the defense a little bit and allow our athletes to kind of run, you know, find holes and pick them out. So that was probably the biggest thing offensively that we did. And then defensively, we had a very good defense this year, and they were able to kind of keep offenses at bay. They did a great job of bending but not breaking. So defensively, we knew that if we could keep them under a certain point total, or if we could keep them under 13 points and force some turnovers, that we'd be in a good position to win a football game. And, you know, we didn't change a whole lot defensively, but offensively, we kind of had to revamp the whole thing once our quarterback went down, and then once our starting running back went down, we kind of said, okay, we have an opportunity here to either go down in flames, or we can fight through this and see what happens. And we actually lost our last two games of the season on the last plays of the game, and so we entered the playoffs with a two-game losing streak. So there was a situation that, you know, I felt like I was beyond my skill set as a head coach on how we were going to regroup and get ourselves some momentum into the playoffs. I give all my staff the credit because we came in and kind of revamped a little bit offensively of what we were doing and proved to pay some good dividends for us.
Coach, I know you mentioned the flexibility that you guys showed, I guess, in tweaking the procedural philosophy you were using, going from up-tempo and spread and maybe bringing it in and creating extra gaps with your formations. And, you know, I love doing that kind of stuff. I always believe that you had to be flexible in that way. But how much of the learning for you guys stayed consistent in, especially for the guys up front, that the schemes you had in were still the ones you were relying on, just in a different way?
Yeah. 95% of it was game terminology. It was a reconfiguration of a run play or a pass concept that we already had installed, but just out of a different formation. Protection may have changed a little bit, but everything, that was one of the biggest things we talked about, was how do we maintain the integrity of our concepts and terminologies and our teaching within the new schemes that we're putting in. My offensive staff worked tirelessly to kind of make that happen. And one of our firm beliefs is where there's gaps in communication, there's going to be gaps in execution. And so we always made sure that when we drew everything up on the board from a standpoint of how we were going to install it, that there was a connection point to what something that we've done before, so that it wasn't a new skill set that they had to learn, because we didn't have the luxury of time to do that at that point. Now we had to coach some players up who maybe weren't playing on the offense. I mean, we moved an outside linebacker to be a tight end so we could get into the double tight formation. So there was some new teaching there. But the base of our scheme stayed very similar. I mean, inside-outside zone didn't really change a whole lot. Counter didn't change a whole lot. It's just we might have brought a player from a different spot than we've done before.
Coach, just so we have a visual, would you be able to share maybe a couple of clips, like pre-transition and post-transition, just so we can see how you took from, you know, ideas from what you're doing in the spread to what you were doing in compressed sets?
Yeah, no, I'd be happy to do that. I'll definitely share that.
Cool. We'll put those up on our show notes as well. Well, Coach, we're excited to have you as a featured speaker in Orlando at our national conference. Before we get into a preview of your topic, I know actually we met in person there last year, the first time you and I sat down and did a little podcast from the national conference. But talk to our listeners a little bit about the experience in national conference and what that's like. And I always tell coaches, like, don't call it a clinic, because it's actually way more than just, you know, the typical X and O's clinic. So talk to us a little bit about your experience and your thoughts on national conference.
I think if first class is the first thing that comes to my mind, the way the coaches, the attendees, I mean, I went as an attendee last year, and the way that we were treated was just phenomenal, from the accommodation to the shuttling to the facility, and then the opportunity to listen to speakers that have won state championships, that are, you know, professionals in their own right, but then also the professional growth and the casual conversations that you have in between sessions or after the sessions are over. It's the best conference clinic that I've ever been to. And I've been to a few, because I try to, you know, that's how we spend our off season. I was blown away by it, and I'm bringing my staff down. Had I not been speaking, I still would have been bringing my staff down, because I feel like it's an opportunity for staff to connect with each other, because it's fun to be with your staff overnight, because you get a chance to learn a little bit about each other too. But then more importantly, you just have this plethora of football knowledge that you can just use at your disposal. And then you know what else is pretty good is the food. The food is excellent. I think last time I was there, myself and my offensive coordinator were enjoying the hors d'oeuvres that they had in the main convention area, and we thought that was dinner until we walked and saw the gigantic banquet room that had four or five different stations of food that were set up for the coaches. And it's as big of a banquet as I've ever seen. And it's just fun. You know, my best memory is just being on a shuttle bus and sitting next to a coach and striking up a conversation and a friendship who I still keep in touch with to this day. And then you find out that, you know, they've won four or five state championships, and, you know, everybody's got their own story to success or their coaching. And it's just a great place for coaches to go, because, you know, I think especially as a head coach, oftentimes it can be, you know, it can be a little isolated, and it's great to find some people who are maybe going through the same, you know, going through some of the same stuff that you are, so that you can relate to each other a little bit. And I would recommend it to any coach or staff who's looking to professionally grow, hands down to any other in-state clinic, because it's just phenomenal.
Yeah, a couple things that I hear consistently. Number one is the food, because how many clinics have we been to where the food and beverage is some, you know, off on a side room, some boxes of pizza and a keg, plastic cups. and then you talk about the spread here. Like, I mean, the first time I went to it too, I was like, again, haven't, like you said, hors d'oeuvres. I'm like, hey, this is pretty good. And then they open up those doors to the dinner and you're like, wow, you know, they're carving roast beef and have all these different dishes. And you're like, this is unbelievable. It's like being at like a, you know, a banquet or a wedding or something, just top notch with how they do. And I agree. Our people are great. I mean, there is a lot of, you talk about just the staff at USA Football and how they make sure everything is, you know, detailed out, and that our guests, our coaches there are really taken care of. And then the other thing I see constantly, and I've been on those shuttle buses, and same thing, met coaches that I haven't met before. Rick Jones, who's been on the podcast a couple times, from Greenwood, a state champion from Greenwood, Arkansas, sat with him on the bus, but then he introduced me to all these other guys who I hadn't met before, and we've all become friends. I constantly call those guys and talk to them about ideas, have them on the podcast. It's the same kind of thing, and I agree. When you get to the position of the head coach, you don't really find that locally, because those are the guys you're competing against. And I mean, for the most part, you know, you're going to keep very guarded about the things you're doing. But you go to something like this, and I mean, there's just the opportunities too, whether it's on the shuttle bus or some of the social time that we create, whether that's before, after, in the middle of the day, just all kinds of opportunities to, you know, it's more than network. It's really about collaborating with other coaches, and just the spirit there of making the game better, making each other better. It's something I've never seen. I think it's pretty special. One of the special things about our national conference.
For sure. I can honestly say that things that I've learned at that convention, and then also through your podcast, are things that I applied to our season this year, and it's one of the main reasons we had the success that we did. So it's one of those things that USA Football provides. Is I don't think there's a better arena to go get that information, whether it's through podcasts or at the convention, because you can immediately impact your program exponentially.
Yeah, well, and I'm hoping, and I know actually what you're going to share, I think, is going to be impactful for coaches there, because you do a great job with your off-season program, and I know a lot of guys have the competitions, but the level of detail that you put into yours, and we've shared some of it on the podcast, those are going to be some of the things that you share and talk about, and it's all encompassing. It's not just about the players. You fold everything into this. It's really well thought out. So give us a preview of what you're going to share with us at National Conference.
Sure. We're just going to take a look at our program from a holistic standpoint, you know, how to develop a four-quarter, so to speak, year-round football program. And not only just to develop it, but how to look at it from a business standpoint and raise the stock of your program, get key stakeholders to take an investment in what you're doing, including the parents, including the community, how to add social media to that element, how to brand your program into something that people and parents want to trust their kids to be in, and how to create an experience for the kids that is going to be the best high school experience of their life. Because that's really what it's all about, is connecting and giving the kids who are sacrificing so much something that they'll never forget. And I think sometimes we forget about the main goal. And if we keep the experience in the forefront and we develop a program that keeps kids connected and includes the parents, you'll find that the winning takes care of itself. And I know we've all heard that before, but more importantly, the culture that you can build and the connection that you can make is going to allow you to do things with your program that you only dreamed of doing. And I'm kind of seeing that for really the first time with the success that we had as a program in our season from a winning and losing standpoint. But all those things that we've laid the foundation for now flourishing because of the connection and the experience we've given the kids. So I'm excited to share just a little bit of it, and hopefully some people can take away a few things that they might want to employ into their program. We'll give different ideas of how we compete, different ideas of how we structure our summer competitions and the fun and how that looks in our program and what is fun, how do we define it. So I'm really excited for the opportunity, and I couldn't thank you enough for allowing me to share our program with you.
Well, absolutely. I'm excited about what you're going to share. And as you mentioned, all kinds of great guys to learn from. Our high school group this year, I think last year we were at like 95 state championships accumulated. I want to say the group that we have speaking this year has 111 state championships accumulated. And then there's the guys who've also been in the big game, and that's just under 50 there. So you're talking about some guys who have really taken their programs to the next level and the opportunity to learn from them and interact with them. In addition, we have some great FBS coaches, Phil Longo, Herb Hand, Manuel Mazzoni, coordinators, some position coaches. We'll have a few more names we'll add to that list here soon. PJ Fleck talking about Row the Boat. We have a couple other keynote speakers we'll announce here soon. So just an incredible lineup. Excited to have you as a part of it. And for our listeners out there, go to usafootball.com/NC19podcast to register. Enter the code podcast99 to save on your registration. Rob, thank you for joining me again. Congratulations on a great 2018 season, and best of luck in 2019, and I'll see you in Orlando.
Keith, I can't thank you enough. I'll see you there.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.